Okay, last time we were talking about Takens-Bogdanov bifurcation. So let's start with a little review before we do something new. What's the definition or the signature of a Takens-Bogdanov bifurcation? What happens at a Takens-Bogdanov bifurcation? Two eigenvalues become zero. Okay, so it's called a double zero bifurcation somehow. And there are two different ways that two eigenvalues can become zero. What are the two different ways? Yes? Okay, so if you're following a locus of saddle node bifurcations where one real eigenvalue is already zero, and you follow the next largest real eigenvalue, it may approach zero as well. So when you're moving along a saddle node bifurcation, you may get to a double zero. What's the other way that you can get a double zero?
If you follow a half bifurcation, then the real part is zero. So the imaginary part is plus zero, then double zero.
Okay. So if you're following a locus of half bifurcations, the real part of a pair of complex conjugate eigenvalues is already zero. The imaginary part isn't zero. But if the imaginary part goes to zero, then you'll have two eigenvalues with that are real and zero. Okay. So at a Takens-Bogdanov bifurcation, two different one-dimensional loci of bifurcation points has to come together. A locus of Hopf bifurcations has to come together with a locus of saddle node bifurcations. Okay? Now, what are the implications of two eigenvalues being zero? Okay? When you're on a saddle node bifurcation, one eigenvalue is zero. And what's the dynamical implication of an eigenvalue being zero? Now, if eigenvalues aren't zero, then in phase space, you have an eigendirection, and the movement along that eigendirection is controlled by the eigenvalue, right? So if the eigenvalue is negative, the system is attracting in that eigendirection, and it attracts at a certain characteristic, with a certain characteristic time constant, which is the reciprocal of the eigenvalue, okay? And if the eigenvalue is positive, then the vector field is repelling, and you move away from the steady state in that eigendirection, and the time constant for doubling your distance is, again, the reciprocal of the eigenvalue. So what's happening if an eigenvalue equals zero? What's happening to the time constant? Time constant's going to infinity, okay? That means that the movement close to the steady state in that eigendirection is slowing down, right? The time constant, say, was, did show decay, and then a little bit later it's going to show growth, but right at the bifurcation point when the eigenvalue is zero, the time constant goes to infinity, and that shows up in the dynamics close to that singularity, okay? And that's called critical slowing down. It means that the movement of the system close to that bifurcation can get very sluggish in certain regions of phase space. Okay? Now, what if you're following a Hopf bifurcation and the imaginary part of the eigenvalue goes to zero? What happens dynamically? The period goes to infinity, okay? Because the period is 2 pi over the imaginary part of the eigenvalue. So the period gets very long, and again, that's a reflection of the slowing down of the dynamical system close to the singularity where the eigenvalues are becoming zero. So when you have one eigenvalue zero at a saddle node bifurcation, there's this phenomenon of critical slowing down. When you get two eigenvalues going to zero, you double it, right? There are essentially two directions in state space where you have this slowing down kind of behavior, and that shows up also in the period of the oscillation going to infinity. Okay, so these are all simple dynamical consequences of the fact that you have two eigenvalues that are zero, which is the signature of a Takhmanov-Spartanov bifurcation. Okay, so we know that at a Takhmanov-Spartanov, the way we'll spot a Takhmanov-Spartanov bifurcation is when you follow a locus of saddle node. Okay, so you're drawing a one parameter bifurcation diagram, you draw a locus of saddle nodes, and there's a locus of Hopf bifurcations nearby, and you follow the locus of Hopf bifurcations, and it comes in and touches tangentially the locus of saddle node bifurcations. And what also happens as the locus of Hopf bifurcations comes in and approaches the locus of saddle nodes, what also do you notice when you're doing the calculations? What will happen to the calculations as the Hopf bifurcations are coming into the saddle node bifurcation? The period of the limit cycle becomes infinite. In fact, everything slows down. The bifurcation package gets slower and slower because it takes more and more calculation to figure out what's going on because the period is going to infinity. Okay, and you can see that quite clearly, the period going to infinity, and that's the signature of a Takhmanov-Spartanov bifurcation. Okay? So now you're drawing your bifurcation diagram. It's a two-parameter bifurcation diagram. You follow the locus of saddle nodes, you follow the locus of Hopf, they're coming together tangentially. What do you know also has to be there? There also has to be a saddle loop. Okay? And the saddle loop has to kind of lie on the far side of the Hopf. You'll see the saddle node first, then the Hopf bifurcation, then the saddle loop bifurcation. Okay, so you always get this sort of a picture from Guckenheimer's paper. I'm on slide 43, where you see at the Takhmanov-Spartanov bifurcation labeled TB, you see three curves coming together in this two-parameter bifurcation diagram. One curve is the locus of saddle node bifurcations, which is part of the cusp. And the other is a locus of Hopf bifurcations. The middle line is a locus of Hopf bifurcations. And the third line is the locus of saddle loop bifurcations. And all three loci come together tangentially at the Takhmanov-Spartanov bifurcation. Okay? So locally, you know that's what a Takhmanov-Spartanov bifurcation has to look like. And what Guckenheimer taught us in this famous paper from Physica D is that there are many more implications about the existence of a Takhmanov-Spartanov bifurcation. Many other things come with it because this is the local picture close to a Takhmanov-Spartanov bifurcation, but there's also a kind of global picture of what has to come along with it because, you know, all these bifurcation pictures are going to have to fit together. Okay? And in this particularly simple system that Guckenheimer studied with a certain amount of symmetry in it, there's a cusp bifurcation, there's a loop, the Hopf bifurcation comes out of one Takhmanov-Spartanov, loops around the cusp and comes back in and attaches at the other Takhmanov-Spartanov. And there's a locus of cyclic fold bifurcations that come from the degenerate Hopfs that just run across and connect the two degenerate Hopf bifurcations. That's not too hard. But then, when you follow the saddle loop bifurcations from the Takhmanov-Spartanov, the saddle loops go crazy. They do all kinds of things. They go across the cusp to the saddle nodes on the other side and undergo other bifurcations. The most important are these saddle node loop bifurcations that I'll discuss in a minute. Okay, but these are all kind of implications. They come from, they all emanate from this, from these Takhmanov-Spartanov bifurcations, and they all have to be there in order for the dynamical system to fit together in a continuous fashion. Okay, and in Guckenheimer's paper, he indicated the phase portraits that are associated with each of the little regions in the two-parameter bifurcation diagram, and that's what we went over the last time we tried to sketch out what those phase portraits have to be. Okay? And you can never learn this by just looking at pictures or hearing somebody do it. You have to do it yourself. You have to sit down with the blank slate and draw all these space portraits for yourself and see exactly how they fit together, or you'll never get the hang of this. Okay, any questions before I move on? This is review so far. So I gave you a blank slate that you can draw on, and you really should practice that. Now, let me just say a few words about the saddle node loop bifurcation, because it's one we haven't studied in detail yet. And also, it's a non-local bifurcation, so you can't spot a saddle node loop bifurcation by looking at eigenvalues. It's a global bifurcation. It comes from a homoclinic connection. But we have to know how to recognize it. And you'll see it in a computation exactly the same way Guggenheimer saw it. So Guggenheimer, remember what Guggenheimer was doing. He was concentrating on the Takens-Bogdanoff bifurcation. He followed the hop to see what they were doing. That was relatively simple. Then he follows the saddle loop coming out of the Takens-Bogdanoff bifurcation, and he found the saddle loop goes across the bistable region to the saddle node on the other side of the cusp. And there, the saddle loop kind of came in tangentially to the saddle nodes and followed the saddle node for a while, and then the saddle loop pulled away and went back across the bistable domain. Yeah, Tung-Li? It doesn't look tangential the way it's drawn here, but it is. If you actually do the calculations and look close to where these curves come together, it takes a quick bend and comes in tangentially to the saddle node. Okay? And again, you have to do these calculations with auto or XPP auto or something like that. You follow saddle loop. How do you follow a saddle loop bifurcation? Well, you know there's a saddle loop close to the hop. Okay? So, at a Takens-Bogdanoff, you find the limit cycles that are bifurcating away from the hop, and you follow them for a while, and you know that their period has to get very large because you're approaching the saddle loop. And when it gets large enough for you to feel comfortable, you can tell because the locus point won't move very much. You're still doing calculations and you're getting longer and longer periods, but you're not moving on the two-parameter bifurcation diagram because you're so close to the saddle loop. So after a while, you just stop, maybe at a period of 10,000. And then you tell auto to follow limit cycles with a constant period of 10,000. So you're not exactly on the saddle loop, but you're very close to the saddle loop. For all practical purposes, you're on the saddle loop. And now you follow limit cycles with a period of 10,000. If you follow them in one direction, they'll come back to the Takens-Bogdanoff. And if you follow them in the other direction, then they'll go across the bistable domain to the other side, and you'll see that locus coming in tangentially to the saddle node that you calculated before and just following right along the saddle node for a ways and then peeling off tangentially and coming back across the bistable domain. Okay? So that's the signature of this saddle node loop bifurcation. And on slide 45 is the kind of generic picture for what's happening around a saddle node loop bifurcation, SNL. So it's where a saddle node and a saddle loop come together tangentially. And let's just take a quick walk around this bifurcation. To the lower right, we simply have an unstable steady state surrounded by a stable limit cycle. And if I move clockwise around this picture, I'll cross a saddle node bifurcation. So what happens at a saddle node? I still have the unstable steady state surrounded by the stable limit cycle, but now a saddle node has been created somewhere away from the stable limit cycle. So there's this new saddle node point, and if I go past the saddle node bifurcation that degenerate steady state splits up into a stable steady state and a saddle point. And the two trajectories that come into the saddle point form the separatrix that separates the domain of attraction of the stable limit cycle, which is this region here, the domain of attraction of the stable limit cycle, from the domain of attraction of the stable steady state that was created at the saddle node bifurcation. Okay? But that's not too tricky what's happening there. And if you follow the trajectories that are coming out of the saddle point, to the left, the trajectory coming out of the saddle point just goes over to the stable node. And to the right, the trajectory that comes out of the saddle point is attracted to the stable limit cycle. Now, as you change your parameters, this is a two-parameter bifurcation diagram, as you change the parameters and continue moving clockwise, you cross a saddle loop bifurcation, a homoclinic orbit, where now the trajectory that comes out of the saddle point to the right loops around and comes into the saddle point from the bottom. That's the homoclinic connection at the saddle loop. And that homoclinic connection destroys the stable limit cycle. And when you go past the saddle loop bifurcation and you keep following this same trajectory, the trajectory that comes out of the saddle point to the right, it now loops around the unstable steady state and is attracted to the stable steady state. And all the trajectories coming out of the unstable steady state, there's one of them that sails right into the saddle point, but all the rest loop around and eventually end up on the stable steady state. So the stable steady state is now the global attractor for this system, and the limit cycle has been destroyed. Okay. Now, we keep moving in a clockwise direction around the bifurcation point, and what happens next? The trajectories that are coming out of the saddle point are looping around and eventually coming into the stable node. Okay. Now, as I move towards this line labeled SNCC, saddle node on an invariant circle, what happens is that the saddle point and the node come closer and closer together, because now we're approaching the saddle node bifurcation. So, and that's a codimension one bifurcation. I just need one degree of freedom to push the saddle and the node together and to make a saddle node on an invariant circle. So that's the diagram in the box at the upper right. That's what the phase space looks like right on the SNCC line. On the SNCC line, the steady state is a saddle node. Right, it comes in three direction and goes out in one direction. And it's a saddle node with an invariant circle. The invariant circle is follow the trajectory that comes out of the saddle node to the right. It loops around the unstable steady state and comes into the saddle node on the other side from the left. So that's a homoclinic connection. It's a trajectory that comes out of a steady state and then comes into the same steady state. So that's a homoclinic connection. It's an infinite period invariant circle. It's an invariant circle. It's not a limit cycle because it has infinite period. But when I go past it, then the saddle and the node disappear and I'm left with the invariant circle, which is the large amplitude limit cycle. And when it's first born, just to the right of the SNCC bifurcation, it has infinite period. Okay? So this stable limit cycle is created or destroyed, depending upon which way you move, it's created or destroyed at a homoclinic connection. And the homoclinic connection is either a SNP connection, a homoclinic from a saddle node, or it's a saddle loop connection if you cross this locus. In either case, those are codimension 1 bifurcation points. I need 1 degree of freedom in order to create the non-generic face portrait. In this case, along the saddle loop, I need 1 degree of freedom to make sure that the trajectory that comes out of the saddle point on one side comes into the saddle point on the other side. That's to make the homoclinic connection at a saddle point. At the SNP bifurcation, the homoclinic connection here is robust. As long as this is a saddle node, the homoclinic connection is robust because I just have to follow this trajectory out and it's bound to come in on the other side because everything comes into a saddle node. So I only need 1 degree of freedom to make sure that this stays a saddle node. And then I get the homoclinic connection for free. Okay? But if I follow along the locus of SNCs and see what happens to this homoclinic connection, the homoclinic connection gets closer and closer to that this last orbit that's coming into the saddle node from the south. That's the trajectory that's coming out of this unstable steady state. So when I get to the point where the saddle loop peels away from the saddle node, that's the picture in the square at the lower right. It's a codimension 2 bifurcation where I still have the steady state is still a saddle node. It's stable in 3 directions and unstable in 1 direction. There's still a homoclinic connection. I have a trajectory that comes out of the saddle node and comes back to the saddle node, but it comes back to the saddle node in the last possible trajectory that comes into the saddle node. If I go any further, then this trajectory will not be homoclinic anymore. It'll come out of the saddle node and it'll come onto a limit cycle. So this is the picture, and this is a codimension 2 bifurcation. I need 1 parameter to keep the steady state degenerate saddle node, and I need freedom of a 2nd parameter to find the homoclinic that connects in this fashion. So that's a codimension 2 bifurcation. And we say the unfolding of this codimension 2 bifurcation, which is called a saddle node loop bifurcation, this is the unfolding of that codimension 2 bifurcation. This shows you all the different phase portraits that have to exist close to this codimension 2 bifurcation. Okay? You with me? So these are standard bifurcations. You have to be introduced to them. And the more experience you get with them, they'll become your good friends and you'll recognize them the next time you see them. But at least the first time, you know, how do you do? Store it in your memory banks. If you see something that looks like this again, you go and consult the books, you consult your notes, and you see whether this is really what it is or not. Okay? But these are the standard bifurcations, and I'm trying to describe to you how you'll recognize them the next time you see them. In terms of drawing these bifurcation diagrams, these 2-parameter bifurcation diagrams. Okay? Now, there are sometimes, you'll get fooled, right? There's people that look alike, but they're not the same people. So you have to be careful here, and you have to check things closely. But, I'm beginning to give you the basic ideas about how you recognize these bifurcations when they show up. And the ones we've talked about so far are very common. They appear all the time, in my experience, in analyzing molecular regulatory networks in the cell. Okay, any questions? Yes.
Is there a difference between saddle point and saddle node?
Saddle point and saddle node. Yes, there's a big difference between a saddle point and a saddle node. So here in the on the left-hand side, I have a saddle point and a node. Okay? I recognize a stable node because trajectories are coming into the stable node in all directions, right? And a saddle point, trajectories come in one direction and they go out in the other direction. That's what makes it a saddle point. And close to a saddle point, the trajectories kind of come in for a while and then go out along the unstable direction. And a saddle point, look, a saddle point can serve as a separator between the domains of attraction of two stable attractors, right? So to the left of the saddle point is a stable node that's an attractor, and all the trajectories over here come towards this stable node, including stuff over here. See, it sails around and comes into the stable node. But on the other side of the saddle point, the trajectories are being pulled into the stable limit cycle. And this little domain here, if I colored it in, would be the domain of attraction of the stable limit cycle. And it's formed by the domain of attraction of the stable limit cycle, is the edges of it are this unique trajectory that sails into the saddle point from the top. And this unique trajectory that sails in the saddle point, it comes from the top, it loops around the limit cycle, and then comes into the saddle point from the bottom. Those two trajectories together form the boundary of the domain of attraction of the stable limit cycle. So saddle points are very important dynamically. And the way you recognize them is because all the eigenvalues are non-zero. Okay? Some of them are positive and some of them are negative. So at a saddle point, the negative eigenvalues are the attracting directions and the positive eigenvalues are the repelling directions. Okay? Now, a saddle node, you get a saddle node when you take a saddle point and a node and you push them together. So just imagine that I push these two steady states together and I get this one. This saddle node is still attracting from the north and south directions, because these guys are all attracting from the north and south directions. But in the east-west direction, it's very different. It attracts trajectories from the west and repels trajectories to the east. Okay? So at a saddle node, the picture looks like it's coming in three directions and going out in one direction. And this kind of picture right here, where it comes in from the west and goes out to the east, that's where lambda equals zero. It's neither attracting nor repelling in that direction. Okay, so local means I can figure everything out just in the neighborhood, just in some local neighborhood in the state space, okay? And I get the information from the eigenvalues and eigenvectors of the Jacobian matrix in the vicinity of the steady state, okay? So local information is always information that's right around the vicinity of a steady state. Okay? So I can tell whether, locally, I can tell whether I have a stable node or an unstable node or a saddle point. And locally, I can tell when I have a small amplitude limit cycle that's coming from a hop bifurcation, because that's all happening in the neighborhood of a steady state. So that's a local bifurcation. But on the other hand, a saddle loop connection, I can't tell just by looking in the vicinity of the saddle point. I can't tell that this trajectory coming out of the saddle point is connected to this trajectory that comes into the saddle point. I can't tell by looking locally. I have to follow the trajectory going out. It goes away from the steady state Lord knows where it goes. It eventually comes around and comes back in on the other side. So that's a global connection. With what? Well, yeah, generally global bifurcations are hard to find. Local bifurcations are easy because you just compute the Jacobian matrix. That's a simple recipe and look at the eigenvalues. But to find global bifurcations, you have to solve the differential equations over long periods of time and through regions of the state space and then characterize the singularity. A bifurcation is always a singular point. Okay. Now, the way you actually do it, you usually cheat. So the way you cheat is that we know that close to a saddle loop homoclinic, close to the saddle loop connection, is a limit cycle with a very long period. And so what we do is we find the limit cycle with a long period and we follow the limit cycle. That you can do numerically. But actually finding the saddle loop connection is much more difficult. Yeah, Tung Lee?
So, what do you mean by an initial logical complication? What can you see from the numerics?
What you see from the numerics, right, you pre-computed the saddle node. You just see that sailing along. That's a continuous curve. It has a well-defined derivative, right? And then you're following the saddle loop, and it comes in here. What you'll see when you draw it, when you take the output from auto and draw it, what you'll often see is the saddle loop looks like it's coming into the saddle node at an angle. But if you blow that up finer and finer, eventually the saddle loop's got to take a turn and come into the saddle node tangentially. It means that the tangents are parallel to each other. Okay? And it just has to be. I mean, that's a mathematical proof. You can prove that these two curves are tangential when they touch. When you actually do computations, oftentimes they don't look like they are. But if you do a finer and finer, more careful calculation, eventually the saddle loop has to turn and touch the saddle node tangentially. It's just a theorem. Okay? Now, there are some other non-local codimension 2 bifurcations that I don't want to talk about right now. I'm going to delay it till later, and maybe I won't get to it. And that's why I think there are two pages missing from your handout, because the one I gave you ends on page 20, and the new one I gave you begins on 23. I'll come back to those bifurcations. They're bifurcations that change the stability of limit cycles that come from homoclinics. And I think I had a mistake on one of those pages, which is why I pulled them out and I haven't fixed it yet. Okay? So we're going to skip over